This is PCJ Radio International.
Well, hello, and welcome to another edition of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. I'm Keith Perron. One of my earliest recollections of the portrayal of a journalist or news editor in the media was on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And I suppose there's many other people out there that remember the meetings between Mary Richards and Lou Grant, played by Ed Asner. After the Mary Tyler Moore Show was cancelled, of course, the Lou Grant character did continue in the Lou Grant Show. He was a hard-nosed, drinking news editor who just wanted the facts. Now, very often, this is how journalists are portrayed in film. And believe it or not, it does influence what people think of journalists as a whole. To find out more about how journalists are portrayed in film and on television, we have this special report from Richard Ady.
Who wants to start?
Tomorrow, Rocco Despirito wants to make lasagna. I told him we did that last week with the barefoot Contessa, but he's insisting. What do I do?
For the segment on miniskirts, do you want all size models?
For next week, I want to do a piece on juice cleanses. All the celebs are doing them, and they have amazing powers of rejuvenization. My idea is that I get a juice cleanse, and then we can, like, measure my toxins.
Lisa, do you want the living room set or the stools?
VC says we can't have Eva Longoria until 2 weeks after she does GMA. What do we do?
On psychic animals, would you...
It's not always that highbrow, of course, but it is a very familiar scene. You don't have to have worked on a paper or a magazine, a TV show, or even a radio network to be completely au fait with what's going on here. That's because journalists not only write about and reflect popular culture, they're portrayed in popular culture too.
Close your eyes. Checking out your cell phone.
Did we just break the law?
Nope. That's what you call damn fine reporting.
Good reporters don't have friends, only sources.
You okay?
An insider, ready to speak the truth.
And I want to go on the record.
A reporter who will help him reveal it.
What does this guy have to say that threatens these people?
You want to run the story? You've got 5 hours until 8 o'clock. Go get the story.
Boy, what if these aren't the guys? What if they're innocent?
Detain them today, we make them look good on Saturday. Everybody's happy.
As you can hear, there's a lot of material. Joe Saltzman is the world's leading authority on this seemingly arcane field of knowledge. He runs a project called The Image of the Journalist in Popular Culture, IJPC for short, at the Annenberg School for Communication in California, which sounds fascinating, if you're a journalist. But really? Why is this worth doing?
My simple answer is because the images of the journalists you see in films and you watch on television and read in novels influence the public's opinion about the news media and the effectiveness of that media, and the ramifications of how the public perceives and judges the media can have a profound effect on the success or failure of our American democracy. What I tell my students is, you know, think about that. When your favorite aunt asks you, why would anyone go into journalism, a profession filled with arrogant, impolite reporters who invade people's privacy, make up stories, and sensationalize the news, where is she getting her information? She probably doesn't know any journalists, has never visited a newsroom. She has no idea how reporters work, yet she has very specific ideas about who journalists are and how they behave. How did she get this? Well, I believe she learned this by watching journalists in the movies or on television or reading about them in novels and other aspects of popular culture.
What quickly emerges when you talk to Joe is how far back this all goes. It's much, much further than you'd think.
You know, think back to your Greek playwrights. One of them summed up the popular opinion more than 400 years before Christ was born on the quote we all have heard, "None love the messenger who brings bad news." You know, the basic image of the journalist from the silent days of the movies to today is that of the flawed hero fighting everyone and anything to get the facts out to the public. The reporter editor could get away with anything as long as the end result was in the public interest. That's the key. The heroic journalist has to work in the public interest. Mm. A journalist could lie, cheat, distort, bribe, betray, violate any ethical code as long as the journalist exposed corruption, solved a murder, caught a thief, or saved an innocent. Then the public considered that journalist a favorable image, an heroic image. But at the same time, there's the indelible image of the journalist as evil, as the worst of villains, because these journalists use the precious commodity of public confidence in the press for their own selfish ends.
Let's go back a bit, because I'm wondering when journalists first appear in popular culture.
Well, you know, I define a journalist a lot differently than most people define a journalist. My definition of a journalist for the IJPC project is anyone who functions as a journalist in history. Because, you know, the word journalist is relatively new, when it only used to mean the editor of a journal. So I think I can redefine it in the terms that if a person does the job of a journalist, you know, gets news, gets information, brings information to the public, then I consider him a journalist. And I've traced this back to the beginnings of recorded time, the Sumerian literature, the Hebrew literature, the Greek literature, Roman times.
So that image of sort of part hero, part scoundrel, that's thousands of years old, you're saying.
I agree. I believe, and I've written a paper on this, that the Greek historians were not historians at all. They were journalists. But the people who study history, they think journalism is a cheap, unimportant profession. So they didn't want to call them journalists. Now, if you look at any definition of a historian, the Greek historians don't fit it at all. But if you look at any definition of a journalist, the Greek historians are journalists. They go out, they report, they come back, and they orally tell the public what's going on, about what happened, how did it happen, why did it happen, when did it happen. All of the things we journalists do today, Greek historians did in their time.
All right. So ancient Greek historians were proto-journalists, and there's plenty of heralds and messengers in Shakespeare. But the idea of journalists as such, people writing the news for publication, for newspapers, that only gets portrayed when it starts to happen in the real world, which means you begin to see journalists the way we understand them in 18th century novels. And they're not kind portrayals.
English novels really are the ones who are creating these images. And the 18th century novels and Daniel Defoe's novels are bitter against journalists. You can go back to the novels of the 18th and 19th century, probably even the 17th century, if I had my notes with me, and you'll find many, many images of the journalist. Silent films use those novels to create new images of the journalist for a whole new public.
They set the template, in a way. The way journalists have been presented in novels was then the way that journalists began to be presented in the first films.
I think you're absolutely right. And then, of course, journalists without their voices are not very good images, are not images you can remember. The silent film did their best, but the journalist really needs the voice to show what the journalist is. And when the talkies came, journalists exploded. I would say the 1930s and the 1940s were epic for journalism films. Journalists were everywhere because they could talk. And what they needed in these early talkies were people who could talk and explain to the public what was going on. Who is better to do that than a journalist whose whole occupation is finding out what happened and how it happened and asking questions?
And the thing about journalism, and especially when film was getting going, journalism really meant newspapers, is that newspaper officers and newspaper people really offer something in terms of telling a story on film, don't they? They're you know, newspaper officers are loud and people talk fast, and there's a kineticism and an energy about things.
Absolutely. The fast-talking journalist became a staple, I think reached its epitome in His Girl Friday, which was a remake of The Front Page, in which they talk so fast that you really have to listen, and it's very enjoyable.
Hello, Hildy. What are you doing around here?
I want an interview with Earl Williams. Mm-mm. How about a little service?
No more interviews.
Why not?
Sheriff's orders. Besides, the doctor's coming over. Can't do it.
Oh. Say, is this your money?
Well, I don't think it is.
$20?
Yeah, I guess maybe.
That's what I thought. Come on, I'm in a hurry.
Hey, Joe, open up here.
Now, we may look back at the pictures of the 30s and a lot of the silent films and think it's a negative image, but the public did not think it was a negative image at all. First of all, many of the journalists were played by the most popular actors of the day, so they brought that with them, and people loved to watch them. And the journalists could act by our ethical standards in the worst way. but the audiences loved them because in the end, they usually were together with the leading lady, or they solved the crime, or they caught a thief or exposed corruption. So they ended up being good guys at the end.
Joe Saltzman from The Image of the Journalist in Popular Culture. And popular culture's never been as fascinated with journalists as it was in the early 1930s.
There were two films that I think became prototypical of what the journalism image would be. One is The Front Page, which almost everybody knows about, which has been remade over and over again. But the one very few people know about that I happen to love is a film made in 1931 called Five Star Final. And that's an incredible motion picture in which a tabloid editor and his staff do the most atrocious things to get stories you can imagine. The publisher has no ethics whatsoever. And the final shot in that film is the newspaper in the gutter, splattered by mud, or some people say something worse.
Yeah, loving this killing, huh? How many dead? Wife shot them both. Then committed suicide. Marvelous. Sure, it's a great story. Sure, give her the works. Plaster it all over the front page. Get an extra out if you want to. Say, paint it on the front of the building. Tattoo it on Hinchcliffe's chest. I don't care what you do with him, because I'm not working here anymore. No, Hinchcliffe's got to get himself a new head butcher. I've had 10 years of filth and blood. I'm splashed with it, drenched with it. I've had all I can stand, plenty of it. Take him this killing to Hinchcliffe with my compliments, and tell him to shove it up his...
Now, that's a proper resignation. None of this I'm going to pursue other opportunities, Guff. It isn't only film that makes journalists the story in the 1930s. At the end of the decade, an English writer published a novel that even today, more than 70 years later, journalists themselves find overwhelmingly compelling, funny, and true. Tom Rackman is a former journalist who's now a novelist.
Well, I think that you can't speak about novels pertaining to journalism without beginning and probably ending too with Scoop by Evelyn Waugh, which is beloved of all reporters, I think. It was written in 1938, and it tells the story of this terribly unprepared young writer whose specialty on a newspaper is really writing about the English countryside, and he finds himself unfortunately dispatched to cover a civil war in Africa by mistake. It's a comic novel by Waugh, and it's a brilliant one too. It manages as well to convey, I think, something of the sense of panic and terror that afflicts many people when they're starting out in this business, when confronted suddenly with the important gravity of the material that they're covering and the extraordinary ill-preparedness of their own background and training. And it's certainly something that I felt when I was a young journalist, and I think it's something that many in the business can relate to.
Well, it's one of my favorites too, and one of the other things it does is it's very good on media moguls, just as relevant today as it was then. And it's very good on making something clear to people who aren't in journalism, which is that news happens where journalists are. It's not the other way around.
That's a very good point. There's a line in the book that I wrote, which is that news is another way of saying an editor's whim. And I think that while there are news events and things that certainly are not news events, that there's similarly no question that the presence of journalists and the interest, and they might be peculiar, particular interests of those in the business, certainly shift the coverage in all sorts of unpredictable and sometimes odd ways.
Scoop portrays some journalists as cynical opportunists, but the protagonist, the main character, is different. He's an ordinary person in the wrong place at the wrong time, a bumbler completely out of his depth. Here's an extract that's one of my favourite parts of the book. It's the first cable that he sends back to the newspaper he's found himself working for in London. He's on location in Africa.
Nothing much has happened, except to the president, who's been imprisoned in his own palace by a revolutionary junta headed by Superior Black Call Benito and Russian Jew, who Bannister says is up to no good. They say he is drunk when his children try to see him, but Governor says most unusual, lovely spring weather, bubonic plague raging.
That's beautiful. Tom Rackman says few other depictions in popular culture have been as interesting.
The way that journalists are typically portrayed in the media is, I found, in one of two ways, that you have either these idealistic characterizations, like you have in All the President's Men, where you have these amazingly bold and brave reporters going out and solving problems and perhaps sacrificing themselves in order to save the world. And then you have the opposite extreme, where they are the worst sort of rats who are purely self-interested and are extraordinarily self-aggrandizing and manipulative and hungry for power. And I think that probably the depiction that you see, it moves from one of those poles to the other, somewhat dependent on the mood and attitude towards the news media in general at that point. But it also, of course, determines how people do view the news media. My own experience was that neither was particularly accurate. Neither of those extremes was accurate. That on the whole, people working in the business were ordinary people with all sorts of personal pressures and complications. And it was, in a way, that side of it that fascinated me, because it was these sorts of personal issues that often, quite reasonably or understandably anyway, dominated the lives of those in the business, although their daily work was dealing with some of the grandest issues that society and the world could offer.
Front Page Woman is a story about a happy-go-lucky newspaper girl who's in love with a reporter on a rival paper.
I protect your identity, I print whatever you tell me, and I'll never ask any questions.
No, I didn't start to put this together until this morning.
Which is really strange, because a good reporter isn't supposed to let anything slip by her.
The story of a woman on her way up, a man who helped her get there, and a love they couldn't leave behind.
Callie Atwater, reporting live, control for
up until now, it's been all blokes, but that isn't an accurate portrayal of newsrooms, not now, and not even in 1935, when Betty Davis starred in Front Page Woman.
What are you doing here, Garfield?
Covering the story.
Oh, thanks.
Have a sandwich?
Not me. I've attended these things before. You mean to say that Spike Kiley handed you out this assignment?
Well, I asked for it.
You asked for it?
Why not? It's a big story, isn't it?
Look, Tidbit, an electrocution is no place for you.
Well, I'm a reporter.
No, you're not. You're just a sweet little kid whose family allowed her to read too many newspaper novels.
You make me so mad I could... Well, I could spit.
Joe Saltzman, from The Image of the Journalist in Popular Culture, says this portrayal is a typical one.
Well, it's very funny, because in the 30s and the 40s, the female reporter was depicted as a strong, gutsy, hard-bitten reporter with a lot of masculine traits who could go up against any male reporter and win the day, get the headline, get the exclusive story, beat that male reporter. But that was only for the first part of the film. In the last 5 or 10 minutes, in every film of the 30s and 40s and well into the 50s, the woman then, this very strong, hard-bitten, tough reporter, became a woman who wanted nothing more than getting married and having children. So the women in the audience of the 30s and 40s and even the 50s could feel comfortable. They were very uncomfortable with a woman who didn't believe in marriage and having children, because that's what they did.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because that's changed a lot. If you think about, Mary Tyler Moore, but also Holly Hunter's character in Broadcast News, and then Murphy Brown and Carrie Bradshaw in Sex and the City, you've got these women who are increasingly empowered and able to mix it with their male colleagues, and not just in terms of getting a story.
Well, maybe so, but let's look at those strong women. I mean, they did a lot of flaws in these characters. Holly Hunter falls in love with this anchor who she figures out at the end of the film is not worthy of her love, because he made up being sad during an interview, faked crying. So she gives him up. And the one she should marry, the Albert Brooks character, she really doesn't get together with him. And she has kind of a very sad life if you look at her life away from journalism. So these very strong women, and they are strong, and they get stronger and stronger and more independent, there's always a little bit left of that old-fashioned notion that if a woman doesn't want to be a mother, if a woman doesn't want to be a wife, then maybe she's not a complete woman. So that still lingers on well into the 21st century.
But you also get in something that came out just earlier this year, which is the House of Cards, which stars Kevin Spacey. There's a journalist character in that, and she's young, and you see a very nuanced and complicated betrayal. It's a rounded character because she's naive, but she's ambitious and she's cynical and she's used and she's determined and she's very human.
Well, yes and no. The first episode where she goes to meet him for the first time, she sits down and she opens up her blouse and they make a little story out of it. She does that so he'll look at her breasts, and he makes a point of that. And she says, well, doesn't hurt to look. In the British series, which that American series is based on, the female journalist is unbelievable. She sleeps with him, and she does all these terrible things, and her ending is to be thrown off the roof, for God's sakes, by her source. So, I mean, when you look at both those series, the woman is playing the sex card a lot in a lot of different ways. Sleeping with your source, for example, is very commonplace in popular culture, images of the female journalist. And yet that's considered a terrible thing for any reporter to do. You do not sleep with your source. That's one of the cardinal rules of journalism. You just don't do that. And yet film after film, television show after television show, they're sleeping with their source.
Of course, on-screen journalists don't always sleep with their sources. Actually, some portrayals of reporters are very positive, but these tend to come in one of two flavours. The first is investigative. Tom Rackman.
I think that there are a few films that I have really enjoyed about journalism. I'm not sure that many of them have seemed all that authentic. I think that probably more careers were begun and more lives were ruined than by All the President's Men than by any other film, because it makes the job seem so extraordinary and exciting and thrilling, and it's not really very much like that. Not that it doesn't have those elements, but that it's not as easy as just calling up people and bringing down a president. That film, of course, being about the Washington Post reporters who uncovered the Watergate scandal that led to the downfall of Nixon in the 1970s. And so that one was a great inspiration to reporters through the 70s, 80s, 90s, and I doubt it is anymore, but it was for a long time. And that one, however, I think it does in a rather romanticized way give a sense of the thrill of covering an important story.
Look, I'm going to count to 10, all right? If there's any reason we should hold on the story, hang up the phone before I get to 10. If the story's all right, you'll just be on the phone after I get to 10, all right?
Hang up, right?
That's right. You got it?
Yeah.
We're straight. All right, I'm going to start counting. Okay? We all right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
You got it straight, man?
Carl Bernstein, as portrayed by Dustin Hoffman in All the President's Men. And who can forget those velvet jackets and fabulous collars? So that's the investigative reporter. The other really positive portrayal of journalists, according to Joe Saltzman, is the war correspondent, putting his or her life and sanity on the line to bring back news of terrible events. But it's not always so black and white, even in fiction. Tom Rackman believes the most nuanced portrayal of a foreign correspondent is in Graham Greene's The Quiet American.
This is one, though, that I think has a particular effect on journalists reading it, not just because the chief character is a journalist, but also because it shows something of the struggle that I think many, many reporters, perhaps particularly foreign correspondents, have, being caught between idealism and cynicism in the business, which is a theme for many people over the course of their careers. I think this is a novel about a middle-aged correspondent who is working in Vietnam, and he's confronted with an extraordinarily idealistic American who turns up hoping to turn around the country and perhaps to do so with a rather dangerous means. And it is the way that this character gradually changes from cynical to idealistic and tries to negotiate those two impulses. So I think it's something that is both beautiful in the writing and also poignant in the subject.
This is really a stroke of luck for me. You know, you're one of the few correspondents who has a reputation of actually going out into the field to see what's happening.
Not anymore. Besides, I have never thought of myself as a correspondent. I am just a reporter. I offer no point of view. I take no action. I don't get involved. I just report what I see.
But you must have an opinion.
Even an opinion is a form of action.
The other thing that happens, too, is that he's He's sort of the not disinterested, but dispassionate observer. And he is confronted by somebody who is anything but an observer. He is a doer. He's a protagonist.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it's a very good point you make. It's also, I think, the position that journalists are professionally obliged to take is not to be the active role, but to be the observer. That's why they're there. That's what they're expected to do. And the last thing that they ought to be doing is getting involved and meddling in things, because at that point they're no longer observing, of course, and they're affecting. However, I think that many journalists, and again, especially those who are working abroad and particularly in conflict areas, are vexed by this issue all the time, that they see, let's say, somebody who's a poor young kid who slides off their motorcycle and has half of their arm torn up, and they think, I should certainly help as a human being, but perhaps this young person is also involved in the conflict, or perhaps this person is a rebel, or perhaps they're fighting for the government, or who knows what. And by aiding them, I am getting involved. And there are, that would be the least of the sort of ethical quandaries that one might face.
Tom Rackman, who has first-hand experience of being a foreign correspondent, these days he's a novelist.
5 seconds. Five seconds. I got it. Palmer, here's Joe. Have you seen Joe? We're going to have to do the voiceover live. Natalie, I need a booth with a live mic. All right?
The story you are going to run tomorrow is without merit. These are very dangerous waters you are attempting to navigate.
Too much.
Don, we need a commercial in the booth. What do you want me to do?
2 minutes
in,
boss.
There's not supposed to be a commercial.
He personifies everything that you've been fighting against. And I'm in love with you. How do you like that? I buried the lead.
The image of the journalist in popular culture, the project headed by Joe Saltzman, has a large database. There's more than 83,000 items. So, of all these portrayals of members of the Fourth Estate in books and films and TV shows, which is Joe's favourite?
Well, I hate that question because, like any father of a research field, I love them all, even the bad ones. I'll tell you a group of favourites that I really enjoy because I was the first one to document all of this are the anonymous journalists. To me, the real evil portraits of journalists today, because they appear in film after film that has nothing to do with journalism, are the anonymous journalists. You know, these reporters who travel in packs, armed with television cameras, microphones, digital recorders, crowding, yelling, shouting, bullying, and forcing their way into breaking news events. It's just incredible. They appear so menacing and out of control with their lights and cameras and jabbing them into faces of real people and in the faces of favorite actors and movies and entertainment television programs. And I truly believe that this image of a harassing press with no valid reason undermines the public's trust in the news because they see so much of it. So when you say, what is your favorite film, which I'll tell you, my favorite novel or play or whatever, it pales because these images of anonymous journalists are just all over and they overshadow any positive image of the journalist.
Let me just stop you there because we do that.
Sure,
that happens. I mean, you only have to see, somebody's appeared in court or somebody's suspected of doing something wrong and you see it on the news. You see it here, it in your country. Or the reporters, the pack, kind of moving backwards around someone and shouting questions at them. It's not like it's not happening in real life.
It's accurate, but it's rare. The hard work of journalism, which is 90% of what journalists do, it's not chasing people. It's not running around bothering people's privacy. It's doing the hard work of research and reporting, which the public never sees. I can count on the fingers of one hand how many films really go into that kind of research to show what a reporter really does. It's very rare to see that. All we see is the maybe 5 or 10% of what you just said journalists do in real life, which is true, but it's a very small percentage of what journalism is all about. That's what they remember. Not all the good work that journalists do, not all the hard work of research and reporting, library work, internet work, public records work. The public doesn't know anything about that.
Former journalist and novelist Tom Rockman. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Media Network Plus. Until next time, so long, take care. 73 and 88 to the ladies.